Hello and welcome to the Watson Weekend. We're your hosts. I'm Rick Watson.
It's Jessica Lisewski. We're here again. It's Friday.
It's Friday. Happy day.
Friday. We're happy you're here to see us.
It's a little bit of a rough start today, Jess. We're your weekly backstage pass to retail tech and the e-commerce circus. Our circus and our monkeys, both.
Yes, it is. This is our playground. We're still learning to juggle. I cannot talk today, but at least we haven't dropped anything yet. I don't know if that's true now.
It's false.
Balls are dropping left and right.
We are excited to be sponsored by Miracle. Thank you guys again for helping support the podcast and the show. Because traditional e-commerce is just code for not growing, it's time to do better than the status quo. Join 450 retailers that are growing 6 times faster than with AI automation and a platform built for what's next. Marketplace, dropship, and retail media at enterprise-grade scale in one solution. It's time to accelerate with Miracle. So thank you guys, folks. It was great to see the whole team this week, right after Commerce Next. I actually spoke and... it's a little bit deja vu. Michael, who's our guest for this show, was in the audience a panel discussion. I was at the Miracle Summit this week, so it was exciting.
Oh, that's awesome! Retail always comes full circle. Retail, yes. And e-commerce. It is. Someone joked earlier today that Rick is the Kevin Bacon of e-commerce and retail. It's like 6 degrees of separation, and I 100% buy into that philosophy. So. And we have a lot of news to get to. We don't want to keep you from the amazing headlines. So as usual, we're going to bring you the headline hangover. We're super grateful that we have a sponsor, Crystal. It's the smarter way to EDI. Brands like NeuroGum and Andy Swim love it at crstl.ai. So let's hit it.
In a world where big commerce has been a little bit lagging behind the game in the last few years, it was interesting to see Feedonomics actually and big commerce overall partner with Perplexity this week. If you think about what Feedonomics is about, it's essentially kind of a channel management solution that sends your feeds to all the places, ingest orders from all the places, similar to kind of like our background, Jess.
Yep.
And if you kind of look at what kind of data these LLMs need, and if you think about the consideration, research, conversational commerce engine of the future, it seems like an important partner here. And it's a little bit surprising that they're announcing first ahead here that they see an opportunity. And it makes me wonder that, do they have an advantage here that, you know, perhaps the broader industry isn't seeing yet?
Yeah, I think they do. I thought it was a really smart partnership. And, you know, all of these LLMs need access to data, and no better to bring that to them than BigCommerce and, of course, Feedonomics. So I do think that we've talked about some of these LLMs having challenges, like truly closing the loop. And I just wonder, you know, is this like help speed up some of that and give them more accurate information? So kudos to the team.
Yeah.
And some big eye in the innovation.
Yeah, this is a good one to see. I mean, we have seen other hints of partnerships, but this is the first official announcement I've seen from one of the platforms. So it's kind of cool to see that. And we are on to our next story, which I am super excited about.
Yeah, you know, Rick, we're really going to dive cheeks first into this one because Dude Wipes has gotten a strategic investment from TSG Consumer Partners. And really, this company has been on an explosion, no pun intended, of all the things that you need in order to keep things clean and tidy in areas that, you know, most people wouldn't talk about. People thought like toilet paper could do the job. And these guys said, no, no. They bootstrapped their company. They've been really innovative. They were on Shark Tank. Mark Cuban made an investment. You guys might recall they had a Super Bowl ad, like no one wants a messy tight end. So, you know, really this company has been on the scene and really taken the reins of what I think good brand marketing is, as well as a good product. I mean, if the product yeah. was crap, it wouldn't sell, but we know better. So lots of, I think, interesting things here to come. They talk about, you know, manufacturing, using connections about manufacturing and retail. They already are in Walmart. But what's interesting, Rick, is TSG also owns or has strategic investment in Dutch Brothers Coffee, Yard House, two places that you might just, it might make sense to see some dude wipes. I feel like product integration is really in their future. So we'll be good, you know, to watch this one. They've got their number one sorted. We'll see what's up for them in number two.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I do think it's my duty to inform the audience that coffee is a diuretic. And so you could let everything just flow properly there. So
that's what I'm saying. I think that they're just going to be printing money with this Dutch Bros coffee partnership alone. If that doesn't happen, I'm going to be really disappointed, because that just is a natural thing.
Yes.
In my mind.
Cool. Well, we'll move on from that mess. The next mess we're going to step into here is Yotpo. Good God. Ooh. What is it good for?
We might need some new wipes.
Exactly. So look, Yotpo has been adding a whole bunch of new categories. You know, they've added SMS and subscriptions, and it just feels like every 3 to 6 months you wake up and they're trying to become something new. This week, their CEO went on LinkedIn saying, like, we raised a lot of money and cost cutting has been a KPI for our company. And it really shouldn't have been. Really, it's just been innovation. It should have been innovation and throughput. I'm like, is there any reason you wanted to post that on LinkedIn? Like, what was the situation here?
Yeah.
What do you think, Les?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, I think the cost cutting thing is like the cousin at your reunion that you don't really talk about, but you know they're there. You know, it's just kind of a thing, right? I don't know that it should be an OKR. It's not exciting. It's not going to rally teams. You know, you kind of have to be able to, in your OKRs, really focus on innovation. They also talked about being a bit rudderless and a lack of prioritization, you know, underestimating how critical good data is. I felt like this was a little bit of a manifesto to a certain extent. And it was just interesting to see it all play out on LinkedIn, where of course people do go sometimes to spill their deepest, darkest secrets that I really don't need to know, but somehow I'm supposed to care about. So yeah, I mean, I felt like what I guess I was missing. What's the point? Question mark.
Yeah, and it kind of feels to me we've seen a few cringe things in the past. There was like a public deal board that, mm-hmm. you know, if you saw that help last year, like, help us. Like, mm-hmm. you can all of LinkedIn become my marketing funnel? That was an interesting one. You know, the next thing was kind of this manifesto here. So it just kind of feels like there's a little bit too much building in the open. Like, there's some things that we should just
keep on the inside. User info.
You need to know. This was not a moment, I feel like, for a Jerry Maguire type, you know, mission statement that got, like I said, translated into a manifesto. It's okay.
Yeah.
No one, you know, we're not here to show you the money.
Yeah. I mean, the big thing is that goldfish doesn't end up in the toilet that you're carrying.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, who is going to complete them remains to be seen. We'll see what happens. All right. Well, I am going to move on to the Amazon and Walmart battle for who can get things in minutes. I need it now world and society, for sure. You know, it feels like the delivery ante just keeps getting hard, you know, the antique keeps getting higher and higher. No, I'll get it to you in 2 days. No, I'll get it to you in same day. No, I'll get it to you in 3 hours. And so what Amazon has said is, we're here in these 4,000 rural towns. In some cases might be sweeping in with drones by 2030. Don't worry, guys. The airwaves are safe. So they've put a stake in the ground. We're getting same day delivery. Really trying to go after this territory that Walmart has really owned and dominated for decades. Like, they own the rural location, have become a destination in many places for, lots of people hanging out on the weekends, if you will. So who doesn't like to go, troll your Walmart, pick up a couple things, you get your, in some cases now it's like their dental office, their haircuts, and get their checks cash and pick up some groceries. So Amazon's really going after that business. Rick, we talked a lot about Amazon's grocery fails. Do you think they get some good boost here for people who need their paper towels and they aren't willing to drive to Walmart to get them?
Yeah, I mean, Amazon, I even see here in Manhattan, they've started to prioritize same day delivery sort of right in the checkout. So you can say I want it later today by 4 p.m. and you can give a window rather than just sort of next day.
Yeah.
And it says you can get it free if you have at least $35 in your order or something. Sure. So they're not fully gamifying, but somewhat of that. Walmart and their recent investor announcements in the last 2 weeks, they had a conference with Oppenheimer. They said that a lot of people are really taking them up on their express delivery option, which is kind of like same day groceries within three hours, kind of like what you're talking about. And they said that some weeks that's 40% of the volume that they're getting. Wow. And so not only are they starting to get more density in those routes, which helps their profitability because there's more. Dave Glick is always famous for saying fill trucks filler. So. Yeah. That's the key to logistics. And so route density, will help them get more profitable, but it will also help them get more profitable if customers are paying for the privilege to get that grocery in 3 hours. And so it kind of feels like Walmart is executing that like little bit of a 15-minute convenience store strategy that everyone thought was going to disrupt the world during COVID, but turned out to be an endless money sink. Walmart is actually doing it well, and consumers seem happy with it. So it seems to be a growth engine for them.
Yeah. I think if you had your magic eight ball though, let's say a couple years ago, 10 years ago, would you anticipate us having a conversation where we're saying Amazon's sort of chasing Walmart now? I don't know that I would.
Yeah. It's fascinating. There are definitely advantages that Walmart has here that Amazon doesn't have. They recently combined the Whole Foods leadership under the Amazon grocery leadership. They hired a leader 2 years ago, Tony Hoggett from Tesco. He gone. and so it just seems like it's been a comedy of errors grocery at Amazon. I mean, Amazon... Yeah. I mean, speaking of assortment, Amazon has a huge grocery assortment,
yes.
But it's mostly online. It's like dry goods and stuff. It's not perishables. Yeah. And so that's perishables and frozen. That's really the area that Amazon doesn't have a prayer of competing with Walmart on.
No, they don't. All right. Bring us home with our last story here.
Yeah, speaking of bad corporate projects, we're going to talk about Clorox. They had an ERP project, which, get this, the tagline was 5 years and $500 million projects. You know, you ever wonder why sales reps, like especially doing like big e-commerce projects, like, hey, we're going to help you re-platform, and your IT leader that you're on the phone with says, hey, we're redoing our ERP system. What do you do next in the phone call, Jess?
I abort. It's been nice talking to you guys. Call me in about 10 years when you get here.
Well, in Clorox, in this case, it's not 10 years, it's 5 years. And the number is $500 million. And so that WTF is a three-letter acronym that I would think of instead of ERP in this situation. So like pretty simple. Like, who built this project plan? Why are we talking about this? We're not going to get any gains until fiscal year 2027. It kind of feel like the cockroaches will have taken over and eaten all of our corpses by then. But at the end of the day, even the project leader of the project saying, quote, "So while we're not necessarily proud to be kind of last to this game, that gives us a lot of benefits." Like the last, I don't know. I was taught that the by Moneyball that the last dog at the bowl, he dies.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think also this ERP, like every project's a nightmare. There's no real winners in this situation. Is there really that many more learnings there they have gained because they were slower to market than just doing this, you know, at the right time? And also, again, when we talk about the things that you just maybe keep to yourself, why is this news? We're covering it, but I think it's more satire than anything else.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a dark humor, and you know, we even have that theme this week. It's kind of a shitty week for us.
Clean up aisle three.
Yes, correct.
Courtesy of Dude Wipes. We're not
sponsored. Please save us, Jess.
Yeah, okay. I will, because we actually can't keep this interview to ourselves any longer. Talking about things that should be out in the open, this conversation with Michael Klusky is definitely one. He is the Vice President of Marketplace at Lowe's. He leads strategy, launch, and the development of the company's digital marketplace, which is integrating third-party sellers into the Lowe's.com experience. We talked a lot about the success of Lowe's, so really looking forward to hearing from him. As he oversees cross-functional team, it's focused on seller acquisition, management, operations, trust and safety, overall platform performance, all the things you have to think about when you're running a marketplace. But of course, you have to balance that with innovation, seller and customer success, satisfaction, long-term growth. Michael's covering all of that and more. And he joined Lowe's in 2024. He's also a very seasoned retail executive. He's held roles at Petco, Coupang, Walmart Commerce, and Jet.com, Amazon, all the places that you can go to build a wealth of really strong marketplace experience. Yeah. He brings a global perspective and passion for building customer-centric digital experiences at scale. And we can't wait to unpack this really engaging conversation that you had with him.
Yeah, it was super exciting. I got to see Michael briefly this week at the Miracle event. And so let's roll it. We are live here with Michael McCluskey, the VP of Marketplace at Lowe's Home Improvement. I'm excited to do this interview. There are not that many real marketplace operators out in the world. And so super excited. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. Been looking forward to this conversation. Good to see you.
Yeah, and let's start with the beginning, which is maybe your mission at Lowe's, as well as kind of back to the beginning, which is kind of your experience starting at Jet, how that led you into your current role, just to give our viewers a little bit of idea of like the depth of your experience in marketplace, which is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, happy to. Thanks, Rick. Like you said, I've spent the bulk of my career in e-commerce, and more specifically in the marketplace space, in the 3P space. I started my career almost 15 years ago at Amazon, worked there for several years, had an awesome opportunity to learn a ton there. And then, as you said, I went over to Jet.com pretty early on in the Jet days. We all remember those. And then had the great opportunity to end up working at Walmart Global E-commerce after the acquisition of Jet by Walmart. And that was just a phenomenal experience to not only learn marketplaces, but omni-channel, right, at the world's largest retailer. After that, I spent a little bit of time overseas working for Coupang in South Korea, which is also a hybrid 1P and 3P online retailer in South Korea. And more recently was at Petco Health and Wellness Company. I joined Lowe's about a year ago, so still new-ish to the team, but you know, my goal and my charter here and the reason I joined has been to launch and scale an online marketplace for Lowe's.com. And we've been making some really tremendous progress on that over the past year, and excited to talk about it with you today.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's super excited. So I always, and I'm sure in the same way, I always like to start any conversation talking about the customer, which is a marketplace is a tool, right? It doesn't matter if the customer doesn't accept it, doesn't adopt it. And the employees and your associates know how to use it to help customers. So who's the marketplace for at Lowe's?
Yeah, it's a great way to start, Rick. You know, I think about, you know, frankly, starting with the customer, I don't think customers really know or care about a marketplace, right? From the perspective of the customer, it really starts with, you know, I have a problem. I'm working on a project or I need a particular product, right? They're not thinking in the context of channels, 1P or 3P or dropship. That's not how a customer is searching, right? That's up to us in the line of work that we do. Right, and right. So your point on marketplace being a tool, you know, from my perspective, it's really kind of the evolution of retail in many ways into the platform economy, right? And what marketplaces can do for a retailer is really help them in that first part of the e-commerce journey, which is what we like to say here at Lowe's is having it, right? You need to have the assortment that customers are looking for before you can even start this whole journey and get the customer what it is that they're looking for. And so I think what's exciting for us in Lowe's in the home improvement industry is that, you know, we're operating in a $1 trillion approximately total addressable market here, right? And it's pretty fragmented. And so you think about that and just the sheer breadth of assortment that customers are looking for today, a marketplace is that enabler. And I think that's what's so exciting for us. And you alluded a little earlier to the focus of our company on this right now. It's a key pillar of part of our total home strategy. One pillar of which is accelerate online, you know, to meet what it is that customers are looking for.
Yeah. I mean, we work with a lot of clients in mid-market and enterprise. And one of the first questions we always ask them when we start working with them is like, what problem do you solve for your customers? And I find a lot of companies don't know how to answer that question, but I have a feeling that somebody like Lowe's, literally your customers are coming to you because they have a problem, all sorts of problems with their homes, but sometimes like they have a dream too. So let's talk about maybe the two types of customers that the marketplace is built for.
Yeah, no, you're spot on, Rick. Our customer base is really segmented in two cohorts or two types of customers. About 70% of our customer base today is the homeowner. It's that DIY customer. You know, that's me right now. I just moved to the Charlotte area and bought a new home here as I started at Lowe's. And I'm
near Lake
pretty
Norman.
Overwhelmed.
How far from Lake Norman? That's the only question.
Well,
really.
Our office is just off Lake Norman, beautiful area. And I'm living in Center Charlotte right now, where we also have a great office. To be honest, I'm almost overwhelmed by the amount of stuff we have to do for our home. And I feel like such a novice, you know, where do I even begin? And so to your point, you know, I think what differentiates a lot Lowe's in this whole ecosystem is that customers are coming to Lowe's with a problem statement in mind, a project in mind, right? And there's that trust there that Lowe's can be my partner in solving this. And so that's the DIY customer that we serve. And then about 30% of our customer base is the pro, what we call the pro, right? Is that small to medium sized business that's coming into Lowe's. And if you haven't been into a Lowe's store recently, I really encourage you to come out and check out our pro desk. I mean, it's just an awesome experience to see how our associates engage and service our pros. But we see marketplace as being a natural extension of that too. The ability to just offer a lot more assortment that both our homeowner and pro customer are looking for, whether it's for your own home or it's your own customers if you are the pro.
Yeah, and there's clearly, there's products. I think most people, when they think about a marketplace, they're thinking about finished goods, tools and saunas and like maybe heavy, big things, but there's also services too. How do services fit into the marketplace vision?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Rick. Service is also a key part of the Lowe's total home strategy, right? You know, we know that fulfilling a product in the very complex home improvement space isn't the end state, right? It's not just shipping that product to the customer. Oftentimes that product, when it arrives at your door, it needs an installation. It needs to be assembled, right? There's complexity to that. And again, that's an area where we know that we're pretty well differentiated in how we do and how we can continue to service customers, right? And so as an opportunity for our marketplace, we're super excited about that because marketplace items, again, are just, as I said at the outset, just an extension of our total catalog, right? So the ability for us with the more and more assortment that we're adding to be able to add on that layer of the service to make it function in your home the way that you need to is something that we think that we can do really well and will continue to position us for success.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that these service providers that handle last mile things like installation, repair, maintenance, that's a marketplace too. And there's a whole, you know, not necessarily the marketplace that we came on here to talk about, but all these business models, it seems like they blend together just to help the consumer, you know, get their job done faster.
Totally agree with you, Rick.
How do you think about, like, look, you're starting one of my notes here is like you're starting the marketplace kind of like before day zero, which is, okay, you know who the target is, your customers, but assortment, you could get anything. And the question is like, why not get anything? So how do you choose what to prioritize first from a catalog, assortment, merchandise point of view?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. I've been super fortunate and have loved this experience about starting here at pre-day zero. You know, day zero is super fun because the opportunity in front of you is so, so vast, right? But to your point, how then do you go about it, right? And so, you know, we leveraged a lot of data and insights to inform us, you know, what are those core categories that make a ton of sense for us to prioritize with respect to our marketplace, right? And so, what we started to see was it's really that, again, you know, I'll use this term a lot, this extended aisle that we talk about, right? Where there's a lot of long tail, right? So you start to think of areas like home decor, seasonal and outdoor living, patio furniture, tools. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much breadth, but also depth within each of these categories, different styles that customers are looking for, right? Again, I find myself going through this right now as we're trying to find a new couch for the house. It's like an endless search, right? Trying to find exactly the right one. And so when we think about Total Home, you know, with our marketplace, we're not trying to position Lowe's.com as the everything store. But what we do think is that Lowe's.com can be the everything for home store. And that's kind of how we're going to market here. So we're certainly prioritizing those categories where we see a lot of opportunity from an adjacency perspective to really augment what we do in our stores, right? You know, a key competitive advantage, of course, of what we have as an omnichannel retailer is the great assortment that we offer within our brick and mortar, you can get that product within an hour, right? Via buy online, pick up in store or same day delivery services. What's great about marketplaces is it's really going to extend that offering with the breadth of assortment that's just hard to carry in your store. So we're super excited. I mean, we really are approaching all the categories within Total Home, but really focusing on those, you know, deep categories where there's just a lot of assortment and we know that customers are, you know, keen to be browsing and looking for exactly the right item for their home.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a little bit about the Total Home strategy. And I've often felt in my own marketplace career that the fastest way to kill a marketplace is to make it a side project. Meaning like it's someone's third and fourth job, the company, the merchandise, the head of merchandising rules the roost of the whole company. And if you don't own the inventory basically doesn't exist. It sounds like that's not the case here. How did that start? From a Lowe's leadership point of view, I mean, it's clearly it goes up sort of very high in the organization, but I guess how do we get here to begin with?
Yeah, Rick, you're spot on with that. And I've certainly seen, you know, a variety of different experiences and of course read case studies of a variety of different outcomes for marketplace. You know, there's components about marketplace when you stand it up that are great because it can be set it and forget it. But to truly drive a successful marketplace, it's not set it and forget it. It has to be actively managed and it needs full organizational buy-in and support. And so what's been great about Lowe's since I joined this organization is we've had great buy-in from the full executive leadership team of Lowe's, including our chief merchant, which has been critical to our success, right? That we are standing up, to your point, this is not a side project or someone's part-time job. you know, I came in to lead this organization, and we've been standing up a dedicated team specifically on marketplace. Yeah. And we have really great partnership across the line, across the, you know, the other side with our merchant partners and our digital category management teams that are really helping us inform us with mm-hmm. great insights and data of where are your gaps in your category yeah. that marketplace can really augment and support. But you're exactly right. You know, if I believe if we didn't have that executive level buy-in from our top leadership, business, merchandising, technology, we wouldn't be as successful as we've been so early. And we do have a clear mandate to move very fast with this initiative. And the great thing about marketplace is it is about speed. It's about scale. And that's where we're keeping our focus right now. And again, we're fortunate to have that partnership across the organization.
Yeah. And I think Lowe's has the advantage of, first of all, your background is unbelievable. I think coming into this role from your experience at Amazon and Jet, Walmart, Coupang. And I think a lot of people don't have the benefit of that experience. We've seen different models of building a marketplace at a big sort of scaled retailer. Walmart started off, I mean, really back in 2010, but it almost seemed to me as an outsider that the project languished for a while until the sort of the Jet acquisition, really the company got a lot more religion around e-com. Other companies like Target had, you know, marketplace is important, but not critical to the future of the company. They've really invested in their stores. It seems like Lowe's is, I won't say following a little bit more recent Walmart-like direction, but that kind of how it feels to me, and just in terms of like how center, front and center marketplace is to Lowe's strategy.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, it's kind of a yes and, right? Mm-hmm. We believe that we can continue to create amazing in-store experiences and omni-channel experiences. You know, there's a lot of investment happening at the company, of course, with many other retailers as well, mm-hmm. in AI and how that can help us better serve our customers online and in stores. And then you layer on a marketplace on top of that and really expand how often you're able to say yes to a customer because you yeah. had the item they're looking for, that becomes a really compelling value proposition and can drive strength in your business. So I'm a huge believer in it. I was fortunate, you know, as you said, to spend several years at Jet.com and Walmart, you know, to really learn a ton there and see that experience and have been amazed to see, you know, the progress they've made over the past several years. And you know, we're just going to focus on our customer and our seller experience yep. to make sure we're delivering on both fronts. And we believe we have a clear path to create something really exciting.
Yeah, I listening into your answer about saying yes to the customer, and I think a marketplace as a supply tool is all about saying yes to the customer with that agility that it enables, because there's no limit per se to how many products you can bring on, just as long as the systems can handle it and you can make sure that everything is in the rails. Staying yes to the customer, you can't predict what the customer wants. And so it seems to me like it would give you that sort of platform capability that if customer wants, oh, this category is hot, let's go here. How do you see that as part of your mandate?
100%, Rick. To me, it's you said it, it's the agility, the ability to be nimble and not have to worry. I mean, listen, cutting a PO and getting that item into your distribution network, that takes time, right? Naturally. You know, so the opportunity with the marketplace to not have to expand, you know, your supply chain or your you know, warehousing capabilities or worry about inventorying that product and not being sure whether the item's going to be a hot item or not, you know, marketplace de-risks you of that. And so mm-hmm. that's super compelling about the model as well. But you're exactly right. I mean, it is hard to predict nowadays. I mean, particularly in the world of influencers and how quickly fads and trends can come on board, this gives us the ability to see that trend, take the data and react fast to find a credible source, you know, a good seller partner that can help us bring that assortment to Lowe's.com, which is great for Lowe's, it's great for our customer, and it's great for our seller partner as well.
Got it. And with that agility, it seems to me like there's like almost so much agility it provides. The board is committed to this. The CEO is committed to this. How do you guys plan ahead so we can understand, like, what is the growth of this going to look like if it's such an agile proposition? Are you planning sort of category by category, or like, how does that planning aspect?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. You know, we have a really robust digital category management team at Lowe's that has been here for years. And so there's a really strong partnership between my organization and the digital category management team that really allows for that interplay so that we are able to support them in their category needs, right? Mm. And to move quickly, you know, my organization's effectively structured with a business development function and seller management to ensure you know, quality of the goods that we bring, as well as the seller partners that we have and experience for the customers. And that's a really strong recipe for success as well. So, you know, from a planning perspective, it's really about taking the data and the insights, as well as the expertise of the teams that we have internally that can help us to drive category by category, to your point.
Yeah. And you mentioned this team, which seems to also, you mentioned like full buy-in from the head of merchandising, which needs to be okay with this third party product. Planning from the merchant who now understands that they have this capability they didn't have before. How much of it is sort of a push from your team saying, hey, we're seeing these opportunities in the market, knowing from our previous conversations, I would encourage you to build this into your forecast sooner versus later, versus them asking you, go out and find these things for me. Like, is there a ratio that you're looking for? Like, how do you see that push-pull?
Yeah, for sure. You know, right now, what I would say is, as we're in these very early days, having only launched in Q4 of last year, we're still building those muscles as we go on, as we gain more and more scale within the marketplace channel. But as we gain more and more scale, we are starting, of course, to get more attention from our partners in the merchandising organization, because they're saying, oh, wow, this can be really powerful. I didn't realize I could sell items at this ASP. Right? Uh-huh. That, you know, we might sell a faucet that's not something we would traditionally carry in our stores due to the ASP or AUR of the item, you know, and that becomes really compelling too. And we do see that marketplace is a great opportunity for us to diversify the portfolio, the catalog, in both the kind of OPP, you know, entry level type priced items, as well as on the higher end side too. And we're already seeing customers adopt to that. And there's just great learnings that we can take. I mean, we see this as a great data funnel as well. The ability to inform our category strategy, the ability to help inform our merchants what's happening in the market without having to take on all that risk or investment, to your point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that idea of the data funnel from these marketplace sellers, historically, as you know, from your JET days, marketplace sellers are scrappy. You know what I mean? And they're not always these big, huge companies. They can adapt and, you know, just look at the tariff situation as no, you know, people having to adapt and change their business models on a dime. What is it? How much are the merchants coming to you for that kind of data as they're looking at sort of the next generation of products that must much, you know, need to go into the catalog?
Yeah. Yeah. To my point earlier, the more and more we scale, both on the merchant side of our house, as well as even our private brands, of course, right? You know, the interest to understand, you know, what's happening out there in the market. We are seeing a lot of that interest from these teams. The more and more that we scale this out, we're also looking for ways, you know, I kind of take this from my Amazon days, but the invent and simplify, you know, kind of mantra, right? How can we automate more and more and take those insights and data to help inform, you know, what's happening across our organization. But right now, what we're just critically focused on is, to your point, I totally agree, marketplace sellers are scrappy and they are smart and they they know this ecosystem really, really well, right? And there's power in that. And so, you know, from my perspective, you know, I have three constituents that I have to focus on, three stakeholders. It's our core customer, it's the seller, of course, and it's our associate as well. And so as I think about how we continue to scale this, you know, as we're getting close to our, you know, first year anniversary of being in operation, we just need to keep the seller front and center to our experience, make sure that we're keeping it as frictionless as possible for them, right? Making it easy for these sellers to sell with us. And that's why we're, you know, we're super excited about, you know, the announcement we recently made of our partnership with Mirakl, because that has really helped us accelerate and make, you know, just easier and root out friction from the experience so that sellers can just start selling faster.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, I've been in this space a long time. I was at Barnes & Noble standing up a marketplace in your shoes on the other side of the table. We didn't have any fancy marketplace software like Miracle. And yeah. So we were building custom software on top of SAP, and it was a huge pain. And so tell me about the benefits of that partnership and how it you see it accelerating your strategy from a go-to-market.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's exactly right. I mean, you think about, you know, kind of building from scratch versus working with an industry leading partner, right? I mean, this has really allowed us to move with speed and agility. I mean, we effectively launched with Miracle in less than 4 months, you know, from kind of concept to you know, first sellers live. And that speaks to their strength, that speaks to the strength of our tech teams here at Lowe's, but just that we were easily able to establish this partnership to move with speed. And so, you know, it's really two key factors, Rick, that, you know, that kind of drive the partnership and the, you know, what we think is going to help us continue to accelerate here by partnering with Miracle. And the first one is it just really helps streamline the onboarding process. I mean, that is the part of the whole equation that is perhaps the least sexy of everything that goes on with the marketplace, but it is critical, right? I mean, we have had no dearth of interest in the seller community to work with Lowe's, which is really encouraging and exciting from us. Yeah. We're getting a ton of inbound interest. The next step after that, once you get that interest and vet your seller, because we are still a closed ecosystem today and vet every single seller, after that, you kick off the onboarding process. And again, that's the piece that you want to be as quick and easy as possible for the seller, as minimal investment, so that they can just do what they do best, which is selling. And so from there, you know, not only the onboarding piece with Miracle, but really just the ongoing, you know, catalog management, you know, analytics and insights into your running of your day-to-day business, you know, we get a lot of strength from them. And so it's really been a strong partnership, and we're really excited to see where this goes. You know, you ask, you know, kind of what's next. I think there's tons of opportunity, you know, beyond kind of our initial launch here in this first year. You start to think about opportunities like integrating with our ad network. It's called Lowe's Media Network here, right? The ability for sellers to actually participate in and buy ads and create demand within our ad network is really compelling. And so there's a lot of opportunities in the value-added services space that we're in discovery on and you know, will be coming soon.
No, that's... I think super exciting, and I'm taking away from this section, you were talking about kind of your three constituents, your customer, who always has to be number one, seller, and then associates. You know, I'd love to unpack in the next kind of part of our discussion, sort of the associate side, which is where, I mean, look, Lowe's is a big company. Lowe's has been around for a long time, and its systems were designed, you know, originally for products that are in the stores. And then e-com comes along, and you have these other e-commerce only facilities, and so you can ship things direct to consumer, but still it's goods that you have control over. So the idea that you have product that's not in your store is more or less still a new idea in Lowe's. And so I guess, how do you, you know, I don't know how many associates Lowe's has, but it has to be thousands of associates.
Hundreds
How do you
of thousands.
Deal with
a lot?
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of associates, like so many associates. How do you even start thinking about a problem like that? Because any one of them could walk up to you asking, "Hey, I saw this on the website," or "I have this thing that I bought from you."
Absolutely. Yeah. So first, what I would say, Rick, is rooting out friction from the customer experience was paramount from day one. Right, and making sure that we were not introducing any new friction. And so that means, you know, our marketplace is not a bounce out or standalone experience that customers have to go to a separate site. It all flows through Lowe's.com like any other item. So to your point, you know, a customer walks in the store and says, "Hey, I found this item, but it's not carried in your stores." Could that lead to friction? Right, and that's something we have to always be thinking through. But a primary focus for us too was just knowing that. And you've been in retail a very long time, so you know that we have and face the reality of returns in retail. You know, it's a real part of the equation that we all have to deal with, right? And so we knew that from day one, we had to make it easier for customers, if they were buying a marketplace item on Lowe's.com, that they could return that item to a Lowe's store, right? And that really goes back to, again, those two key constituents there, the customer and the associate. Because at the end of the day, if we didn't enable that and make that an option for customers, we both know that customers were still going to walk into a Lowe's store and try to return an item that they bought on Lowe's.com because that's what they saw. They don't care that it was Marketplace. I got this at Lowe's, so please help me. Right. And so that was critical for us. So it really, through the full funnel, you know, the digital experience on our .com, in our app, all the way down, you know, through the fulfillment and into the returns part of the business, if that happens, we needed to make sure that it was frictionless for the customers. Point two, I would say, is the opportunity for our store associates. And to your point, you know, we have 1,700 stores throughout the US with hundreds of thousands of associates. You know, this is a great opportunity that we see for them to be able to, again, say yes to a customer. They might walk into a store saying, I was looking for a vanity. You know, the assortment that we have in stores, of course, is constrained by the amount of space that we have there.
Right.
.com is not really constrained, right? And so that's, you know, something that we see as also a really exciting thing for our associates, that they'll have the ability, you know, to eventually sell into those items and keep that customer, satisfy that customer, which is really important for us. You know, and my last point I'll say, Rick, is, you know, all officers of Lowe's, we have the great opportunity where twice a year, we spend 8 weeks basically in an immersion, and we go into stores and we rotate throughout the department. So even though I work on the digital side of the business, I get the great opportunity, you know, twice a year to step away from my desk and get out there into the stores, work with our associates, understand their pain points. And then see, you know, how can I help you with the business that I'm working on, right? Because, you know, that's what I'm here to do. It's to serve customers, but also to serve those who serve our customers in stores. And so we see this as a big enabler for our associates as well.
Yeah, I mean, it strikes me that this could be a big problem per se. I mean, if you're associated on a snow floor and you're usually confined to the area of your expertise, you're on the window, aisle with the windows, and that's your domain, right? And you almost feel like you're the warden of that little area, which good and bad, that's like pride of ownership. Like if a customer comes to me, I want to be able to help them as efficiently as possible. This is a whole new dimension of them. And so the fact that I think you have associates embracing these opportunities, strikes me that that's not an accident because of the cultural component you talked about in some of these immersion opportunities. What have you seen? Like, what surprised you about that sort of associate training process as you've gone through your launch phases?
Yeah. You know, Lowe's has been going through a digital transformation over the past 7 years. Really, you know, to your point, you said Lowe's has been around a while. Lowe's is a 100-year-old retailer. Lowe's has been around a very long time, right? And so, of course, that means transformation needs to happen, like any 100-year-old retailer. And so over the past 7 years, there's been an amazing transformation happening on the digital front for Lowe's.com, but also technology in stores as well. And so, you know, fairly recently, you may have seen this announcement, but over the past several months, we've put out new features in stores that basically are bringing AI into the stores in the hands of our associates. So to your point, for that associate that may be new and found themselves in a specialty aisle, right? And I'll tell you, here's a random example for you. I'm trying to learn a lot about grass right now at my house. And I spent a lot of time in our lawn and garden department with our associate who leads that area. And this guy knew everything about grass, right? So he's super specialized on this. There's Bermuda grass, there's tall fescue, something. I still don't know enough. But at the end of the day, not everybody, to your point, knows that much about that. And when customers are coming in with that intent, with that problem, if you're a new associate on the floor, you still want to be able to help the customer. So we've been bringing in these AI components right into the palm of our associate's hand to be able to get to those answers really quickly, right? And then find the relevant products that are going to help the customer to answer that problem. And so to your point, I think, you know, leveraging AI and a lot of the technological advances, you know, it's not just a .com thing, it's a truly omni thing. You know, the customer is everywhere. And so I think we're on a great path with what we've brought, and it's exciting to see how our associates are adopting this to service our customers.
Yeah, I mean, I think as we... Those, you know, these challenges, I think any large organization is going to have to tackle when going to the marketplaces. I mean, I walked into a Nordstrom's the other day. There's a flagship store here in New York City. I went to the customer service department because I was looking to pick up an item I had shipped the store. And I always just look around just to see what's there. And I saw like behind the desk, there was like a dusty corner. Then and what was the label at the top? Marketplace Returns. And there's like three. I mean, this is not to disparage any retailer on the program, but there's like a 3-inch layer of dust on top of those returns. And so, you know, even as a customer, you can highlight how difficult it is where the rubber meets the road. You know, that item has to start somewhere to be injected into your system, inspected. You know, the customer gets a refund to whatever payment they use. All of these things have to be considered when you're building a marketplace.
Absolutely. And, you know, we on our side here, we from day one, since driving sales, we have been customer obsessed. So we're not looking just at GMV every single day. We're looking at our likelihood to recommend scores, our voice of the customer. We're looking at our return rates, our in-stock rates, right? I mean, these are the things that are driving the business, right? And really, it's about understanding that experience. You know, we're very inputs focused, you know, and believe that if we focus on the right inputs and delivering that right experience, the outputs will follow. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it's where the rubber hits the road. It's real. It's a real operation.
Right. Exactly. And I'm glad you started getting into some of the KPIs that your team is measured on. If you had to, you know, including voice of the customer and ability to solve their problems, what are the top two or three KPIs that you just wake up thinking about from a marketplace point of view?
Yeah, of course. You know, so I mentioned inputs versus outputs, but you know, naturally, I think that the first thing I'm looking at is our GMV, right? That's our that's our core. Are we growing, right? And you know, it's a really exciting time when you see that every day, every week, your business is growing at a significant rate, and of course, that's what gets us out of bed and gets us excited about what we're doing. The other thing I'm really focused on, and again, this is an input, is just our throughput. Of our seller base, right? And how quickly are sellers onboarding and how quickly are we getting assortment to our experience? Because that's what, you know, we see a direct correlation between growth in the assortment and GMV, right? They are directly correlated. And so those are really important to me. And then of course, I'm looking at voice of the customer metrics on a regular basis. I find that to be some of the richest data that you can get. It's the customer telling you, and I look at the verbatims, right. All the time. Our customer, they will tell you, right, when things are going well, but they'll definitely tell you when things are not going well. And that's how you make your business just stronger and stronger. So we've really infused that throughout our entire business. So our entire team, you know, is not only looking at the outputs of our sales, but also looking at, you know, how are we delivering on the customer experience and the, you know, the charter that we've set out.
Yeah, I mean, so I think for your team, I'm starting to get a good picture about how your team operates and comps itself. You mentioned the digital category management team, which seems like a pretty robust operation within Lowe's for such a large omnichannel retailer. I mean, if you're a traditional merchant, you're talking about gross margin and inventory turns, and that's not necessarily the things you focus on in a marketplace. I mean, there could, you know, a little bit different spin on some of these metrics because you don't own, you know, what does it matter per se what the gross margin is, as long as you solve the customer problem. So I guess how does your counterpart in the merch org, how do they see their own metrics evolving? And I guess how much have they adopted sort of marketplace KPIs into their vernacular?
Yeah. You know, I think the first thing that we really started looking at and will continue to be looking at as we continue to grow this is really penetration of digital, right? And so how much do we start to see that marketplace is penetrating our digital business? And, you know, to my earlier comment, you know, about set it and forget it, that's one of those components of marketplace that is a bit set it, forget it, which is great, right? Because you can focus on the customer experience and the seller experience, but we don't have to worry about constantly negotiating cost of goods or pricing, right? The seller is the seller of record and they set their pricing. Of course, there's guardrails like any other platform, but you know, that's their responsibility and they're constantly updating that to the market. So we don't have to worry about that so much. And we can just worry about continuing to build our platform and getting that right assortment to the site and in front of the customer, right? And so that's critical for us. So I think how we work with the merchant team, it's really how much are we starting to see that marketplace is becoming a key part critical component of the broader digital business. And we look at comps in the market, Rick, and you can see, you know, from the like some of the other retailers that you've seen out there that have launched marketplaces over the past, whether it's just several years or, you know, you mentioned Walmart back 2010 or so that it was launched. Mm-hmm. You know, marketplaces scale very fast when done right and have the opportunity to become a core part of your digital business and be margin accretive, right? Due to the commission-based nature of the business carrying the inventory on your books, having to worry about clearance or liquidation, it can be, a real driver to your bottom line as well.
Yeah, I mean, that all makes a lot of sense to me. And you mentioned about guardrails, kind of this balance of set it and forget it versus oversight. I mean, clearly, you have guardrails for your sellers, like things you have to communicate to them to not do, or are there things from the merchant org that they have communicated to you and as a result to the seller, like maybe this is behavior or pricing or types of things, like what are some of those guardrails if you can be explicit about them that you've set up and how did you arrive at those?
Yeah, the primary one, I would say numbers 1, 2, and 3 is trust and safety, Rick. I mean, we have a really strong brand reputation and that's very important to us in maintaining that. And that is one of the balances of marketplace, right? That you scale it fast, right? To get that assortment to the site, compete with the market. But maintaining, that quality standard, we're certainly not looking to make our website just be a junkyard of any item out there, right? We are trying to maintain quality for our customers. That's super important. So I'd say that's our primary focus right now from a guardrails perspective. And then, when it comes to pricing, and this is pretty industry standard, but it's looking for that, relative price parity. And that's pretty consistent in the market, right? And it's something that most sellers, understand when they're selling across multiple platforms, that they have consistency there. And that just allows us to be competitive, right? And so, we found by keeping our focus on those, we've been able to establish really strong early partnerships with the sellers that we've brought on.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's interesting because there's a lot of folks in the audience wondering where some of these guardrails comes from. And I think a lot of it is, a long time ago, I came up with this idea that a marketplace it's sort of a race between selection and trust. But you want selection to slightly lead trust because you're trying to grow the business and you can't sort of like hide in a hole, hopefully nothing bad happens. You do have to push the envelope some, but then really watch very closely as you're growing to make sure that nothing bad is happening that you're not expecting.
100% agree with you on that. It is a fine balance. And one component of our marketplace model is, we do extremely minimal curation. Our curation really starts at the seller level. I mean, that's where we do the vetting on the front end to make sure this is a quality, reputable type of seller. And there's a lot of data out there to point you one way or the other. So there are sellers that we have not brought on because they're just not a fit for our platform. But after that, to your point earlier, sellers are scrappy, they're merchants, right? And so from there, we're not doing heavy curation. Once we've set the guardrails again of the categories that we are operating in, from there, we're really looking for the seller to bring their catalogs and then the customer to tell us what it is they're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely a lot of players involved in Lowe's bringing this marketplace to life. There's this, your marketplace team, we've talked about the store associates, comment from an Omni point of view. We've talked about the digital merchant org, but even just this setup is a pretty, has to be thoughtfully designed. Like, why is there it's not obvious to maybe everyone, why is there an independent marketplace team outside of the category org? Or what about the customer service organization? Aren't they answering phone calls and emails from anyone, regardless of what kind of purchases is? How do they fit into the equation?
Yeah, you're spot on there. It's we're a large, complex organization, and fortunately, because this has been a critical initiative for the company, and was determined to be so going into 2024 and 2025, that has really enabled us to pull together a steering committee with representation across the enterprise, right, to make sure that really at every touch point, to your point on customer service, that those teams have been trained up on understanding what this is, right? But I think having a core marketplace team and from my perspective, is a best-in-class model because it really allows you to incubate the business in its early days, right? And I think that's important when you're standing up a business pre-zero. And I've seen this a lot throughout my career. I've been fortunate to do a lot of pre-zero businesses. I love operating in that space. And having a standalone dedicated team that's critically looking at this business and you know the accountable, responsible party for it is what enables you to set up the model correctly from the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, I think that idea that there is sort of a one throat choke on the initiative of the marketplace and its success at Lowe's on behalf of your customers makes a lot of sense to me. You talked a little bit about your SteerCo, which we hadn't broached that idea before. It sounds like a kind of a cross-functional group who you almost need to shepherd. You know, you tell them what's going to go on, but you also need to be humble in some, not everything is going to go well with every seller. And so I guess, how does that feedback loop work?
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, we've been fortunate. You know, I think there's a great openness across the organization to learn, right? And I've had partners of mine, peers of mine across, you know, into the merchandising organization come to me and say, hey, I just don't know this model that well. Help us learn it, right? And that's super encouraging for us. That's the stuff we love to do. You know, I've been in marketplaces and retail almost my entire career, as we talked about. I love talking about this stuff. And so, you know, at the same time, I'm not a home improvement expert, right? This is my first time working in home improvement. And so I have a ton to learn from, you know, my merchandising counterparts, right? And that's a really, you know, great balance. You know, so I think the way we've set it up has been great because, yeah, you know, we have to say at times there's going to be a mea culpa moment, right? Where it's, yes, in the spirit of moving fast, we had a seller that wasn't totally right, you know, and that will happen, you know, and we fully expect that, you know, kind of cost of doing business. But, you know, when you have the right, you know, organizational buy-in and you have the partnership in a SteerCo-like fashion, and you line up your organization to be supportive of the broader enterprise, you know, the model really plays out really well. And so, you know, we're encouraged by not only the initial strategy that we've set, but by the organizational model that we've brought to market.
Got it. This has been a fantastic conversation. I do want to ask sort of like one final question about sort of your next steps. You hinted a little bit at Lowe's Media earlier in the conversation, but we never got to unpack it. And I would love to at least start to broach it at a high level according to your kind of key stakeholders, your customer, your seller, and then your associates. I guess, how do all those three customers of yours play an impact or are affected by that roadmap in particular as you step into a sort of a wider media opportunity?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for me, again, it goes back to that frictionless experience that we're aiming for. And so, you know, that goes to, I'll give you another example, Rick. When we launched, we have a loyalty program at Lowe's called My Lowe's Rewards. And so marketplace items are not excluded from that. And so if an item, you know, an item is an item in our view. If a customer comes to Lowe's.com and buys a marketplace item, they will get points through My Lowe's Rewards, which is great for the seller, it's great for the customer, and it's great for us because it'll just keep the customer coming back into Lowe's. And so we think very similarly about, you know, some of these value-added services that we can bring. I mentioned Lowe's Media Network as a great example there. You know, this is something I talked about how we've been really focused on the voice of the customer and looking that, you know, pretty obsessively. We're also very focused on the voice of the seller right now. Mm. And so, you know, we're getting this feedback from sellers. How can we continue to help you grow your business on Lowe's? And the top item that we keep hearing is we want the ability to play in and buy ads in your media network. And so, you know, this was something we always knew we were going to do and we'd be bringing to market. And so hearing from the seller community that this is something they're looking for because they know it's a great opportunity just to grow their business more. And it's great for us because we get to take more to the bottom line. But that's, you know, just one example. I think, you know, just in summary for your question, you know, we're so focused. I see this very much still as day zero, day one. We have great early results, but as we're in early innings, we're just going to keep really focusing on our platform, on the seller experience, on the customer experience, and continue to build on that, but also make sure that we're listening to the customer, listening to the seller, and bringing some of these value-added services like continued integration, whether it be loyalty or media network. And I think that's going to be a great recipe for us. So we're really excited about what's to come as we round out, not quite at year one, but we're getting there later this year and already starting to plan for year two.
Yeah, I mean, that must be an exciting milestone. And I think that's probably going to wrap us in this conversation, but I'm getting out of this obsessive focus on the customer is really the route to success, particularly with the marketplace program that you're growing from pre-day zero. And so it's exciting times for you at Lowe's, Michael. And I really appreciate you spending some time with us on the program.
Likewise, Rick. Yeah, I've, as I told you, I've followed you for a while, read your stuff and followed your podcast. So it's just been a pleasure to be here and get to talk to you and appreciate your time and interest as well.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Rick.